Hi, I'm Sandy Harper. My co-host Dick Reichman is off being an actor today. And welcome to Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, a monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. Now, this is the first of a two-part series with Vic Fisher, who's just written an extraordinary book with Charles Wolfert about his extraordinary life. And today we'll talk directly with Vic. And next month, we'll talk to both Vic and Charles Wolfert about the three-year creative process of creating this page-turner that, to use an old cliche, makes history come alive. And Vic, you know, as I read this book, I couldn't help but think about Woody Allen's movie Zelig, where Woody Allen appeared with great historical figures at great historical moments. So Vic has done this for real throughout his amazing life. Now, most of us know Vic as one of the major founding fathers of modern Alaska, as he helped write the Alaska Constitution and later wrote the definitive book about it. But that's just one chapter in Vic's life. In this exciting book, there are 28 exciting chapters, so it's hard to decide where the focus should be. Vic's early years and lifetime friendships in Stalin's Soviet Union, Operation Statehood, helping to create HUD during Johnson's Great Society, flying from D.C. on Air Force One during the Alaskan earthquake and becoming the Federal Earthquake Coordinator and helping to restore Valdez, being the initiator of ICER, which to this day is an important player for economic and public policy research. Vic's role as a major player and innovator in Alaska state legislature in the early days that truly shaped Alaska today, and his role in Russian-American relations after the breakup of the Soviet Union. And the possibilities could go on and on. And all I can say is everyone should read this book and find out not only about Vic's involvement with important events of our time, but insights to many other Alaskans who are familiar names. So this is like having access to a wise elder who has had a lifetime of personal experiences with all the important contemporary political and social issues. But of course, those who know Vic know he remains younger than springtime because of the twinkle in his eye, his zest for life, and actually walking 3 miles to the studio today. So Vic, where should we begin?
Well, you pretty well covered my life.
No, there's more.
Well, this has been a book that's been coming for a long time. For about 15, 20 years, I've been thinking, I ought to write these stories. And people have said, Vic, you've got to write them down before you die. And so I started playing around with some of the key aspects of my life over the years, made an outline of some of the more interesting parts of my life, and started writing, but I never got around to it. I'm a great procrastinator, and always, life was always full of things to do, be it hiking, climbing, skiing, politics, economics, or whatever it might be. So writing was always sort of at the tail end of things. And I was approached by the university foundation to get my stories written, and as part of the 50th anniversary of statehood, which of course already was several years ago, and so that's how this book got really going. I hadn't thought of a full-fledged memoir autobiography, but it's turned into that. In part with the help of Charles Wolforth, who's been a good partner, and I'm glad he'll be on the next show.
Yes, and we'll hear all about that. But that was the catalytic urge or the nudge to get you started. Was it hard to evoke the memories of your youth? Because reading of your youth in Soviet Union, just if you really capture what it's like to be a young person.
Well, it was hard in some ways and very easy in others, because some of the stories were alive for me because they played significant roles, and other aspects had to be dug out. I was very fortunate that I had a lot of resources available. My father wrote an autobiography when he was in his mid-40s. It was actually, he was a journalist. He was born in Philadelphia, an American journalist who became a specialist on Russia, lived in Russia during the 1920s and 30s. And after World War II started, he wrote a book called Men and Politics, an autobiography, in which he mainly focused on the big events and the policies that led to from World War I to World War II, examining what happened in Germany and attitudes in France and Britain and America and the Soviet Union and so on. And so I had one autobiography. My mother, in the 1940s during the war, also wrote a memoir about her life, and it was called My Lives in Russia. And she told a lot of stories about life that involved me. So I had another crutch to lean on. I have an older brother. He's no longer alive, but he wrote 19 memoirs, and he kept throwing them out and writing a new one. It was sort of a healing process for him to get it out of his system, to understand how he lived and what he achieved and the problems. And sort of, it was real therapy for my brother. But again, I had a third crutch to lean on. And then, of course, I grew up in a time when people wrote letters. And the letters, all my father's and my mother's papers are at the Princeton University archives. And so there were thousands and thousands of letters. And I went there, photographed many between my parents and then in the 1920s and 1930s and beyond, as well as earlier, real early correspondence. And they gave me insights that were totally beyond me when I was a kid, because these were matters of survival in a way, psychological aspects of life in Russia, the hunger and disease and how the parents survived and so on. So there were lots of wonderful foundations for writing my memoir, my autobiography.
Well, plus, what I'm fascinated by, too, is from that period in your life, your two best friends remain your friends for life. Maybe you tell us a little bit about Coney and Lothar.
Yeah. I made two good friends. They were both born in Germany. I was born in Berlin, for that matter, because my mother worked there for the Soviet Railroad Commission. And my father, they had met in New York, and she got this job as a translator in New York with the Soviet Commission. And then they transferred to Berlin, Germany, and my father followed, and that's where my brother and I were born. But then we lived in Russia and became very Russian, and I was born a dual citizen by my father, an American, by my mother, a Soviet citizen. And we lived in Russia, lived back in Berlin, and Hitler came to power and off to Moscow again. And I met these two German boys whose families emigrated when Hitler came to power, emigrated to Russia. And the three of us became very close friends, sort of the three musketeers. We were called the Troika, the threesome. And we did everything together. It was one of those fabulous friendships where we shared everything. Our parents became friends as a result or two older, there were two boys. One was Lothar, another one was Conny. Conny had an older brother, and so did I, and they became best friends. So, I mean, there were lots of ties. And this is a friendship that sort of wove through our lives, because during World War II, I was in the American Army, and Conny was in the Russian, in the Soviet Red Army, and Lothar was in the German Army. So we were on different sides of this world conflict. Again, this just sort of weaves through our lives, and everybody survived. We had reunions. My brother was involved, and his brother was involved in our friendship. In the mid-70s, the three of us got together in Berlin, and my two friends came to Alaska, and I was up in Fairbanks at the University of Alaska then, and they came to Fairbanks. We flew up to Prudhoe Bay, walked on the Arctic ice, and as kids we had dreamed about being pioneers in Siberia, in the Soviet Arctic, and here we were in the American Arctic, and we had wonderful conversations about how artificially the world is divided, and here and this was before the Iron Curtain came down, before the Ice Curtain melted, and here we were with the Russian Far East across the Bering Strait from Alaska, and it's also artificial because the landscapes are the same, the peoples are the same, the issues are the same, and the Arctic Ocean connects both as we were connected as friends. And so there are stories like that woven through our lives, through my autobiography, and just a delightful part of my life.
Yeah, it was fun to read about what Conny did as an adult, as well as Lothar, how different your lives were, and highly achieving lives.
Well, we had totally different fates, and Conny was in the Red Army. He settled in East Germany, became a film director and president of the East German Academy of Art, a very esteemed person, won massive film prizes. Lothar, who came out of the war as a British prisoner of war, found his way to Berlin, where he found his mother and sister, and they lived in a hovel in a bombed-out building in the basement. And Lothar, being a smart guy, figured there'll be a lot of rebuilding to be done, so he became a stonemason, started studying architecture and engineering, became a successful architect-builder, producing a lot of housing projects and office buildings in West Berlin. Conny was in East Berlin. Lothar was in West Berlin. They remained close friends despite their political divides. And so each of them became very successful in his own world.
You know, one a capitalist and one a filmmaker. Is that film still out, the one that... the documentary that your friend was making about your life?
There was a documentary made after Conny died. His colleagues, script writers and film directors and so on, got together, and they made a documentary about Connie's life and work and achievements, and the theme of that documentary was the Troika, starting with our early friendship, and both my brother and I were interviewed at length. The film crew came up, and I took him up to Prudhoe Bay, and I filmed all the places we had been in Alaska, and of course they covered all the other aspects of Connie's life, but this circle just kept closing in many, many different ways.
That's just part of the first chapter, audience. There's so much more to Vic's life and so many little fascinating nuggets, like your father, of course, was a very famous writer and a foreign correspondent for The Nation. And I loved that Ernest Greening gave him his first job.
Yes. Ernest Greening in the 1920s was the editor of The Nation magazine, and my father went to Greening, and my father became a correspondent for The Nation over several decades, and after I came to Alaska, I went in connection with some work down to Ketchikan. On the way back, I stopped in Juneau and walked into the governor's office. In those days, it was really easy. There was a secretary sitting out front, and I think it was Katie Hurley.
Mm-hmm.
and Katie was Greening's secretary at the time. And she just said, "Oh, go on in, the governor is here." And I went in and told Greening that I'm Louis Fisher's son. And so he was very excited, and we had a great conversation. And I sort of tracked Ernest for the decades of his life and my life in Alaska.
Well, your life in Alaska has been more than amazing. Tell us a little bit how you came to the country. I love the Eleanor Roosevelt connection, too.
Well, my father essentially abandoned Stalinist Russia because the repression got horrible in the mid-1930s. Friends were being arrested everywhere. People he knew were totally innocent of any kind of political or other crimes. And they were being arrested and executed, and it was very disgusting. And my father, in 1936, got involved in the Spanish Civil War, became a member of the Lincoln Brigade, and was reporting about the Spanish Civil War. He also was involved in conversations with President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Britain and Premier of France about allowing arms to military weapons to get to the Republican side fighting fascist Franco and Germany and Italy in the Civil War. So he got very involved in that. So my mother and brother and I were in Moscow, and the political situation was just horrible, and I describe a lot of that in the book. And my parents decided that it's time for us to leave Russia, but the Soviets would not let my mother leave, and because my brother and I were there, they considered us Russian citizens, so they wouldn't let us out either, the boys. So this went on month after month, and my mother was pulled in for interrogation by the KGB, and she feared for her life. And finally, the situation got so desperate that my father contacted Eleanor Roosevelt, and they had met before, and she invited him to the White House, and he explained that the family needed to get out of Russia, and with Eleanor Roosevelt's help, within 2-3 weeks, we were out of Russia, finally. And and then sort of another little sidelight, it was that we when we got to the States, all of us were together. My father, in response to Eleanor Roosevelt's request, told her that we were safely in America, and Eleanor invited the family to the White House for dinner, and I was still learning English at that point, and I was very excited to be in the White House, especially when I found myself at dinner around a large round table, sitting next to Admiral Richard Byrd, who was one of my Arctic exploration heroes, and he was in a very resplendent Navy uniform, and telling a lot of stories about his exploits in Antarctica and up north, and I was just in total awe. And the only problem I had was that my English wasn't really good enough yet to be able to understand everything that he was saying. But I had read enough of his activities over the years that I had a pretty good idea of what he was telling. But there was still some frustration. But it was exciting to be in the White House. It was just about my 15th birthday, and I still remember the admonition of my father, which was, watch what silverware other people use. Just follow whatever manners they're showing. And afterward, I got great praise.
You had a significant social experience, a successful social experience.
I passed my etiquette set.
Well, you know, it really was a gift, though, that you were always fluent in Russian. That served you well throughout your life, hasn't it, Vic?
Well, it certainly served me well at various stages of my life. In connection with my university work, traveled back to Russia a number of times and established connections with the Academy of Sciences in the Soviet Union. And then when the Iron Curtain fell, having worked with the university, having real experience in statehood and state government, and knowing Russia history and culture and the language, I was able to get involved for this was after several formal retirements. I was able to get involved in the new life of lasting about 15 or more years of Alaska-Russia relations. And so it's been an exciting existence.
Yeah.
And so there are lots of stories to tell, and many of them are in the book.
Are in the book. Yeah, you were in such a unique position to build those bridges at that time. Now, we're talking to Vic Fisher, author of a fantastic new memoir called To Russia with Love. Vic, maybe we could flash forward a little bit and how you ended up in Alaska and what the early days in Alaska were like for you.
Here again, by the way, is where archives are important. As I was working with Charles, at one point, he asked me that question, how did you feel when you came to Alaska, and what was it like? And in doing my own research, I ran across a letter to my father, no, from my father, saying, thank you for the wonderful letters about camping all the way from Pennsylvania to Alaska and your first impressions of Alaska and going out into the bush during your first week in the territory. And I'd been trying to remember exactly what it was, and I had some general recollections, but that inspired me to go to Princeton, and I actually found the letters written at the time of coming to Alaska.
So he saved all the letters.
He saved everything. I mean, he's got boxes and boxes and boxes of correspondence and other materials. It was fascinating. But so I actually had the impressions of the time rather than just dealing with recollections. And that it was this kind of a resource that helped me through. But to get to your question, sort of the beginning was that I was on a troop ship going from New York to Europe during World War II. There was a good ship's library, and I started reading in a library about different spheres that I might get involved in. As a kid, I'd always played around with electricity, sort of gadgetry and mechanical stuff. And I had it in my mind I'd be an electrical engineer. And after I finished high school, I went to the University of Wisconsin in Madison and enrolled in electrical engineering, and then volunteered for the Army. And I started thinking, I want something that has more of a social conscience, a social purpose to life. And started reading, and I ran across a book about architecture. And I thought, aha, here's something that's design, physical structures, and so on. And it's for a social purpose. And then within this big book, I found a discussion of the field of city planning, which was very new. And I thought, aha, I want to be a city planner. And then concurrently, I was thinking about where do I want to go, and I enjoyed going from Pennsylvania to Wisconsin, and thought I would go west, and then I discovered Alaska is as far west as I can go in America, and when I graduated from MIT with a graduate degree in city and regional planning, the first professional job in Alaska opened up, and I saw to it that I was the first planner in Alaska.
And lucky for us that you made that decision and the call of the North was there. I'm so sorry, our time is so short. This is just a little tiniest of glimpses into this wonderful book that Vic has written. And there's also marvelous pictures, too, in the book. So you might want to join us next month again when Charles Wolfowitz will be here, and we'll talk more about how this book was written. And also, there's going to be a book launch celebration Tuesday, October 30th, 5 to 7, at UAA APU Consortium Library, room 307, and all are welcome. And then we're going to have a To Vic With Love party at Cyrano's on Saturday, November 3rd from 4 to 6. There'll be readings and Q&A and just a good time. And why don't you come and look at the book and see if you're in it, because lots and lots of Alaskans are in the book. Thank you so much for joining us, Vic. What a pleasure.
My delight.
And join us again next month and hear more. To be continued on Alaska Radio Reader Rambler next month. Please join us.